Hello, and welcome to Enlightened Radio. What you're about to hear is an excerpt from the Progress Diner radio program broadcast on November the 29th. And this particular segment introduces the Richard Trumka, the president of the American Federation of Labor Congress of Industrial Organizations, AFL-CIO, commenting on the midterms, but in a fairly personal interview about his background conducted by folks at the National AFL-CIO. In addition, we have Stuart Acuff, a legendary organizer, former organizing director of the AFL-CIO, also weighing in on President Trumka's remarks with some elaboration. Welcome to the Progress Diner radio show, broadcast regularly at 6:30 on Thursdays, unless we're in the middle of dinner, which we usually are, but we don't let that interfere with us too much. Here it comes.
Back, right?
Well, I can also I can maybe call him if we can.
Yeah, but if I tell him, he'll call. You need him to call.
Yeah, have him call. Sorry about that, folks. We had a little slight interruption here. Well, that means that Skype has.
He's going to call back. He acknowledged.
Okay, have him call back.
Yeah, he'll be calling in right now.
Okay, good. We'll get started again. So we're only going to be able to do one call at a time.
And this is, but how do you deal with that when somebody calls in and you're on with someone?
I'm just going to cancel the.
Yeah, you have to remember to hit cancel.
All right, Stuart, you back?
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry about that. Well, you know, guess what's happened? Guess what's happened? We've had, Skype has automatically upgraded and downgraded their product, and they won't let you go back now. That's what this means. So we can't add a caller on the fly.
Yeah.
Now. So, but that's okay. We'll just we'll go through our little thing here, and then Mike can come back and. We have 25 minutes, pal. But it's nice, so it gets this chance for us to publish it in shorter segments, all right? It makes it easier to do, right?
And that's great.
You know, get a podcast that's like 15 or 20 minutes a piece, right, rather than one that's like 2 hours, you know, and stuff like that. So
Nobody's going to listen to a 2-hour podcast.
Not really.
Exactly.
No.
Car drive.
Right. Yeah. If you have a lot of music, they might listen through the music just for background.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah, that's right.
Anyway, okay, well, Stuart, let me start this this little piece here from this interview with Trumka. And I left out about half of it because it was mostly the hosts of the AFL-CIO sort of bi-weekly podcast. Praising the great leader, and we've all been in those in the labor movement. If you've been in any length of time, eventually you'll go to one of those meetings where it's implied that you're supposed to rise and associate yourself with the remarks of the leader. Some people do that with enthusiasm, others out of a sense of duty, others grit their teeth at times. Okay, so anyway, but this is just a few remarks on. The midterms, okay? So let me see if this is going to play through right, okay?
Because somebody's got to do it.
Here we go. Can you hear okay, Stuart?
Yeah.
I think we must be the ones, because no one else will.
What would be the first step in doing that, you think?
I think actually starting to talk to people. Talk to people you disagree with. Talk to people that look a little different than you. Talk to people with people, not at them. Talk with people that worship different than you, that look different, that love different than you do, all of those things. So did you understand that we have so much more in common than we have that divides us? We shouldn't let the few things that we disagree on separate us as a nation.
You had one of these pivotal moments in 2008 when Barack Obama was running for president, and amongst our labor movement, our members weren't necessarily there in many places around the country, and it was because of his race. And it was because of the rumors that were out there at the time penetrating. He didn't have a birth certificate. Yeah. He was Muslim, all of that.
Didn't wear a flag on his
eggs, all of that.
All the nonsense.
And you went home and you gave a speech about it. That went viral.
There's not a single good reason for any worker, especially any union member, to vote against Barack Obama. And there's only one really, really bad reason to vote against Barack Obama. And that's because he's not white.
You want to talk about what led you to deciding that you needed to do that? Because you went pretty deep and you went personal there.
Yeah, probably to really understand that, I probably need to go back and talk to you a little bit about the first time I actually witnessed racism. Mm-hmm. My best buddy when I was growing up was a African-American kid that lived a couple doors down from me. And my dad took us to this little park where you had swimming and things like that. And when you pulled into the parking lot, there was a booth there. And you would have to pay for the number of people in the car. So Tom and I were in the back seat and we're roughhousing around. Mm-hmm. And my dad stops at the booth and the guy looks in and says, "You know that boy can't swim here," pointing to Tom. And my dad never raises his voice. He says, "You better take out for him because that boy's going to swim here." Mm-hmm. And the guy raises his voice a little more. He said, "You know that boy can't swim here." And my dad looks at him, doesn't raise his voice, and says, "You better take out because that boy's going to swim here." Now, I don't know if he took out or not, paid for him or not, mm-hmm. but I know we went in, changed our clothes, the three of us, Tom and I. The pool was really crowded. And Tom and I jumped in the water, and there was this like 10-foot circle around us where nobody would come close. So we had sort of this crowded pool to ourselves. And we swam for a while, and my dad was in water with us, and then we went home. And after we laid him out, I said to my dad, "Dad, why did that guy like Tommy?" And my dad explained racism to me for the first time because I never really saw it before that, never really witnessed it. But it made a tremendous impression on me. And my dad, he just detested any kind of discrimination. Didn't matter what it was. It was because you had long hair, the color of your skin. Mm-hmm. He just wouldn't tolerate it. And he instilled that in me. So when I saw Barack Obama starting to run, I said, here's a good man, you know? But I saw our middle-level leadership were afraid. They were afraid to take a chance and say, "Yeah, let's support this guy," because they didn't know how their membership was going to react. And so I thought, well, they needed space. They needed us, the level leadership, to push them. And so the speech that I made, and I don't know if you recall this, it was to the steelworkers. But I said to them, "If you're not voting for Hillary Clinton because she's a woman, you're wrong. And if you're not voting for Barack Obama because of the color of his skin, you're equally wrong." And went on to talk about the evils of racism and how they've used it for decades to try to divide us. And concluded with the statement that this man is willing to stand and fight with us and protect our way of life and our jobs and our values. And you won't stand with him because of the color of his skin. It did go viral, but more importantly, it created space for our middle-level leadership to go out and do what was the right thing. Mm-hmm. They ultimately did. We got Barack Obama elected, and we really, the labor movement did a great job in delivering for him. I was proud of the labor movement because we were now back at the tip of the spear. Mm-hmm. We weren't in the middle of the spear. We were at the tip of the spear saying, "We're better than this. We're better as a country. We're better as human beings."
And then we got...
And we showed it.
Seems like that...
Well, I'm going to stop there, you know, because this is actually the way that he handled the entire interview, really, about... the end of it has a big upbeat thing about how much turnout there was and the fact that there have been quite a few members organized and... the last year. There's been an upsurge in membership and he claimed it, whatever it's true. So I haven't seen the numbers, but you would probably know. But anyway, how do you feel about the whole tone of that response? And parts of it that I like, but I mean, what do you think, Stuart?
It's ridiculous. The fact that Rich Trumka in 2018 feels like he needs to lecture union people on race and racism. It wasn't Rich Trumka that caused the labor movement to have a serious conversation with itself in the mid-1950s. If there was any one single individual, it was A. Philip Randolph. And then you marry A. Philip Randolph and Dr. King, and you've got a powerful force that challenged the AFL-CIO repeatedly in the 50s and early 60s to come to terms with its own racism, which is endemic in every American institution. I'm not picking on the labor movement by saying that. In fact, I'm congratulating the labor movement for doing that when very few other institutions have ever done it.
That's true.
And it was also due to a lot of black and people of color and women activists and later immigrant activists. And to their credit, the AFL-CIO sponsored what we might otherwise now call caucuses. The A. Philip Randolph Institute, the Coalition for Black Trade Unionists. And down the line, but to use this riff, painting himself as a hero, to deflect from a conversation about Trump and what he hasn't done in dealing with the Trump issues, are the same issues, racism, anti-unionism, in dealing with Trump that he did in supporting Obama. And you know, I'll be honest. I've known Rich Trumka since 1994 when he started running with John Sweeney to run the head of the AFL-CIO. I was the highest ranking elected officer in the AFL-CIO to endorse them, and I played a leading role in their campaign. I'm not bragging, I'm just saying. And I got to know Trumka then and thought very highly of him then. But today, my issue with Rich Trumka is that he has dropped the ball intentionally on the Employee Free Choice Act. He has dropped the ball intentionally on labor's most critical fight, which is the right of American workers to join and form unions. There are not enough Rosa Parks left in the nation to save the labor movement absent the fundamental right to join and form unions. And we started to address that, made great progress, passed the Employee Free Choice Act in the House of Representatives in 2007 by a vote of 241 to 185. Came within the deaths of Robert Byrd and Ted Kennedy of passing it into a law in the Senate, and the already guaranteed signature of Barack Obama. Now, when we picked up that fight in 2003, I thought it was a 15-20 year fight. Right. And I thought that it was going to be like the modern civil rights movement that went from sort of A. Philip Randolph into the leadership of Dr. King, and there was a very smooth passing of the torch. I thought it'd be that kind of a fight, a long, sustained struggle in the trenches, over the airwaves, in politics, local, state, and national. And to his credit, John Sweeney and his lieutenants joined in a very strong institutional push. It so happened that three things happened at the same time. Senator Byrd died, Senator Kennedy died, and John Sweeney retired from the AFL-CIO, and Rich Trumka took over. And that's the last we've heard of the Employee Free Choice Act from the AFL-CIO. My second issue, which is perhaps more serious, is the refusal of the AFL-CIO to join the resistance against the fascism of Trump. And that is a violation of labor history. It's a violation of everything we tell ourselves. It's a violation of every principle, every value, everything, every sense of solidarity, and everything we hold dear. And for whatever reason, Trumka, predominantly because of his own fear, has refused to be any part, even a small part of the resistance, when in fact there are so many things the AFL-CIO could have done in these last two and a half years to be a serious part of the resistance. And instead, we have Trumka making excuses for not opposing Trump, which is
that's hard to swallow.
Of course, we have
in an old labor saying, that's destitute of honor.
We have, right. Of course, we have similar problems with some other representatives here in West Virginia. But
Stuart, you think we can find some wobblies around?
You know, well, yeah.
Yeah, you're talking to one.
I know. Sure. I know.
And the last Bobbly I met actually was Utah Phillips. He said his band was all members, you know, that, but anyway.
Of course.
Well, before our time is out on this segment, though, we got about eight more minutes here. And I wanted to get your take on the midterms because I know you were very active here locally.
Thank you for that, Stuart.
Way more active. JB and I were both saying you were way more active than even him, and he was more active than me.
It was fun.
I wish it was a different kind of active.
And I think you. I think you guys made inroads. I think the campaigns in Berkeley County, if they didn't win, I think they expanded the base of the Democratic Party a little
I think we proved in Berkeley County that at least it has become evident to me, maybe I'm the only person it's evident to, but I feel like I proved to in my own mind that we could change Berkeley County with a sustained effort.
I don't know.
And the key to Berkeley County is Martinsburg, obviously.
Well, not only Berkeley, it's Morgan, too. And Morgan's even more conservative than Berkeley.
Yeah, Morgan's I'm not as optimistic about Morgan County. But
too many hollows.
I think if we had a sustained political, cultural effort in Martinsburg, that we have the possibility of beginning slowly to change the politics in the county. Remember, now the county seat, and obviously the biggest town in the county, is Martinsburg, and it's a Democratic town. So
Jason Barrett.
All our leadership
Jason
is Democratic.
Jason Barrett, yeah. The mayor,
And
the mayor, city council, everything.
Right.
Yeah.
The state city delegate council that represents Martinsburg is so strong. He didn't even have opposition in his past race. But, you know, it was wonderful to see John Doyle get his seat back.
Yeah.
Beat that little Moore prick, and it was wonderful to see Sammy win.
I actually like Rick.
Yeah, John was saying it. I feel like you, Stuart. I think he's a wiseacre.
Well, he is, but I mean,
he's a smart aleck.
I don't know. When he knocked on my door, we had two long conversations.
Yeah, because you're a smart aleck too, John.
Well, so maybe that's true. That could be it. Okay.
You know, like birds of a feather.
I felt like I kept teasing him. I said, "How are you not going to lose your humanity, my friend, in this escapade in the Republican Party?" And
trust but verify.
He, and he looked at me, you know, as if he, you know, actually had absorbed that fairly. I think he's got a complicated thing going on there. But that's just, you're right. I mean, he's in their clutches. He's going to do what they say because
he was a lobbyist. Yeah. He was a lobbyist involved in all that Russian collusion.
Oh, maybe
he was. He was. He worked for the same firm on K Street.
My niece was working for a law firm that Manafort was somehow connected to.
There you go.
So I don't know whether there. I don't think my niece was involved in Russian collusion. So. We don't know.
It's but, no longer collusion, my friend.
No,
it's now full scale conspiracy.
Oh,
y'all heard what?
How does that? How did it jump to conspiracy? I heard obstruction and collusion.
Michael Cohen today pleaded guilty on. I can't remember the other charge, but what came out was that they were working on the Trump project in Moscow until mid-2017. So there was a line of communication directly with the Kremlin established with the building project. And there was lots and lots of money involved. And so it looks like... Mueller can prove conspiracy. He can't with the organization. Obviously, proving it with Trump is a different question. But I think there's enough now that his presidency is going to be further damaged, and if it looks like I think it's going to look, it's going to be very hard for him to hold the presidency.
All right, I'm going to ask you to pause there, Stuart, because I want you to know right now that if he goes down, I'm going to have an acid party. For everybody that I know over 60.
Why do you say that? Why do you say that, John?
Just because it's going to be one of the few moments.
We've talked about this before in another broadcast. They're going to get the wrong impression.
Okay, but I want to tell you right now that that will be one of the few moments in the last 40 years when I figure we'll be on a high point. And we might as well just exit right there. Exit stage, right? Okay.
You won't need any drug because the feeling will be so good that you won't need any kind of drug, not even alcohol. You won't need a thing. You'll just be on. You'll be riding.
I know, but I can imagine Stuart's last speech, for example. Okay, which to his descendants and possible grandchildren and everybody, you know, about how, well, you know, we didn't make any forward progress. Well, we stopped that damn avalanche. So you guys get climbing back up the mountain here, okay? Anyway, I'd like to be able to say that. That'd be good. Anyway, but
that would be great.
All right. Well, listen, Stuart, thank you so much. And because I can only do one call at a time, I'm going to get off before Sammy calls in here. And
okay. Hit the book party if you would. And John, okay. I hope I see you there.
Okay. Hope so.
I'm going to swing by and get you. Right.
Okay.
That'd be great, JB.
All right.
Let me know exactly what time. Probably about 5:15.
All right, man. Take care.
Something like that.
All right. Sounds good.
Bye bye. All right. So now we'll get. I see that Microsoft is. We're going to take a short break here. Play a little tune, and we'll be right back as soon as Sammy calls us. And what are we going to play? We're going to play. the next thing is, yeah, play that.
This ain't Hollywood. It never really gets that good. Call it love if you think you should. There's no need to explain. Tonight it's just you and me. A furnished room, black and white TV. The late movie runs till three. Then it's just you and me again. No work, just a lot of talk. I quit drinking, now I watch the clock. I count the minutes in the dark till the sun crawls up again. And you won't leave soon, because I know you're just like me with no place to go. And there's a love still here. No, nothing's died, it just got hurt and buried inside. Now this ain't Hollywood. It ain't Venice or Malibu. It's not the life I promised you when we set off years ago. You're waiting tables from 1 to 9. I fill out forms and stand in line. No work, just a waste of time. Every day is the same. You're home later each night, I see. I fix dinner while you talk to me. And then we wait for the late movie. Take us away again. And you won't leave soon, because I know you're just like me with no place to go. No place to go, it's just a matter of time. You'll find somewhere, it's just a matter of time. Now this ain't Hollywood. It never really gets that good. Call it love if you think you should. No need to explain.
Is this Sammy?
It sure is.
Hold on. Let's get our headphones on. Hold on. Okay. Thanks, Mike. Jesus Christ. I'll talk to you in a bit.
What time? Did you tell her to call in at 7?
Yeah, she's on now. Okay. We got
hi, Sammy.
Our headsets on. And we're eating in the diner. The diner's serving our food. It's hot. It's hot. What the? What's this here? Hold on.
Can
you hear me now?
I can hear ya.
Okay, thanks for calling in. You know, the Well, this is the Progress Diner radio show, and we serve actual food and or beverage in this when we're in the diner, so to speak.